We used to stay in bed most of the weekend, Hugo and I, when we lived in the attic of a rambling house with pinnacles and gables, among chestnut trees, on the edge of a park in South London. We had a wide mattress on the floor in front of tall, warped windows that could be pushed and dragged open onto a dank balcony. That spring, a pigeon nested in a bower of branches on a level with our pillows. Its nest used to rock in the breeze, and spangles of green light would spill through the canopy of leaves and across our bodies. On weekdays, we worked. I got up early to clean two pubs. I had to pay the fees for my journalism diploma, as well as make enough to live on. Hugo got up to study, at a desk in a little tower off the end of the room. He was doing law in the daytime and the journalism diploma at night. But on weekends, we played. We lived on the mattress as on a raft. We gathered everything we needed or wanted around us on the floorboards, reaching out for things from under the quilt when it was cold, and in summer, sprawling across the sunlit sheets. Hugo used to bring coffee and toast up from the kitchen. His mother had given him a real coffee maker. Hardly anyone had one of those in the early 70s, even in London. She always gave him some expensive thing when he had supper with her. It embarrassed me when Hugo said supper. In the island I grew up in, there was no such meal, any more than there was real coffee. You got your dinner when you came in from school, or in our house you did if Mammy had made any. There was the tea later on. The only time we ever used the word supper was in the last supper. I watched Hugo all the time, though he didn't watch me. Yet he was mad about me. He hardly ever got through an hour of study without stopping to stroke a flank again, or to pull my slack mouth onto his, or to guide my hand into a caress he wanted. He showed me that he needed me. Well, wanted me. I'd noticed, soon after we started to live together, that though he praised my body and my hair, he never said anything about my face. So I was a lot more confident rolling round with him in the dark than when he was looking at me. When we lived in the room full of the liquid cooing and gobbling of the pigeons, he was in his last year of studying for an LLB. The degree involved some legal history, including an hour or so on the history of divorce law, which is how he came to toss onto the bed one day a photocopy of the proceedings in the House of Lords of Talbot versus Talbot, 1856. I lived in the house among the chestnut trees for only a while. I was expelled from that Eden when I was 23, and I'm almost 50 now. Now, it is for the document he once carelessly gave me that I'm grateful to him.